From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
And joining us on the phone, Dr. John Mittermeier. He's the director of Threatened Species Outreach at the American Bird Conservancy. First, John, Dr. Mittermeier, thank you for taking the time to talk to us this morning on This Green Earth.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Great. Yeah, we are too. Because when this story landed on my desk, as we said in our introduction, this show usually covers all things about the environment. And let's be honest, things are pretty rough for the environment these past 10 to 15 years. So a lot of our stories deal with things that are kind of down in nature, the warming planet and melting Arctic and loss of natural resources and species. But here's a story of inspiration and motivation about a little bird called a black-browed babbler that was recently rediscovered in the forest of Borneo, Indonesia. So before we get to the story, Dr. Mittermeier, tell us a little bit about the bird. For those listening who don't know what a babbler looks like, what does it look like?
Yeah, so this is a kind of a small to medium-sized forest bird. For those of you who go bird watching around Utah or places like that, I think it's something sort of you can imagine a little bit smaller than a cardinal or slightly larger than a junco kind of birds that you'll often get at your feeders.
Right.
And babblers are a group of birds that's only found in Asia, East Asia, and Southeast Asia, and they're mostly interior forest birds. So you can imagine birds that live inside the forest, often in the forest understory, and are, you know, can sometimes be pretty cryptic moving around in these dense forest habitats.
All right, and so the next question begs itself, why is it called a babbler?
You know, Chris, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. I think obviously it has to do something with their songs and their voices, but, you know, often the process of naming birds can be a set of chances. So it may be that it's just one species that happened to have a babbling call, and that the person who first came up with that name, that's where it started. But in actuality, many babblers do not have songs that you would describe as babbling per se.
Okay, whereas other birds do. We say.
Yeah, exactly. But there are quite a few cases of sort of mistaken identity that we get here in the naming of animals.
All right, so let's talk about its initial discovery. When was that? You know, how did that occur? And what is its habitat?
Yeah, so I, when this bird was first found, there was a single specimen collected. So, you know, back in the 19th century, ornithologists would go out and they'd actually collect specimens of birds. And this specimen came, you know, it was collected by a European ornithologist sometime between 1843 and 1848, and it actually had an unknown location. It was sort of listed as coming from Java, even though this particular ornithologist never went to Java. So, you know, you think about this, it was kind of a complete mystery, right? And we had all you had to work with was this one piece of evidence of a bird with a probably incorrect location that with an unspecific date, you know, sometime in this 5-year range. And that's really all we knew about it.
And then after its initial kind of founding, let's say, and documenting, it kind of disappeared in a sense.
Yeah, 100%. So I've spent quite a bit of time in Indonesia myself, and I remember, you know, sort of learning about this bird and so little was known about it. You're sort of wondering, you know, maybe is this a hybrid? Is it just a strange form, a weird individual? Is this actually even a species? So yeah, 170 years, and we basically had no further information on this bird. And when to get to that point, you start to wonder, you know, is it even real? If it was, maybe it went extinct without us knowing about it. So yeah, a long period of time with absolutely no updates about the black-browed babbler.
And the way in which this bird was found wasn't because a search party was sent out to look for the right black-browed babbler, right? It was somewhat of an accident, it sounds like. So tell us about kind of the process of its rediscovery.
Yeah, so, you know, what basically happened is you had a local Indonesian birding group working in the area of Kalimantan, which is Indonesian Borneo. And, you know, they were interested in the local birds there, and they were starting to work with some of the local communities to raise awareness about birds and just generate local interest. And this one particular community that they were working with, some of the people there, you know, these people are going out into the forest, and they spotted a bird that they hadn't seen before. They weren't sure what it was, and they managed to catch it and take a photograph of it, and they shared it with this birding group and sort of asked them, hey, what's this? And of course, the birding group, the people then saw it and just were completely stunned, because I think the moment they saw the picture, they were like, oh my gosh, this is something really incredible.
Right. And did they also feel that perhaps, I don't want to rain on the parade here, that sometimes there are variants of different species, that maybe this was a different type of babbler, that just because of different, you know, one-off coloring, it wasn't a black-browed babbler?
Yes, that's definitely, you know, that can definitely be a challenge in terms of identifying birds. You know, you'll get strange individuals, and you can look at the photograph and you're not quite sure what something is. In this particular case, you know, this bird really doesn't look like any of the other babblers in the area. And I think it was pretty clear, you know, these photos were passed around and people looked at them. And when you look at the picture, it's really pretty clear what this is. Actually, rather than it potentially being a different bird, one of the concerns that people had when they first saw the picture was thinking, oh, is this Photoshopped? Is someone playing a prank here? which, of course, they weren't in this case. But fortunately, in the case of the babbler, you know, when you look at this photograph based on the size and the proportions of the bird, in addition to its plumage, it's very clear that that's what it is.
So after this super exciting, pretty shocking discovery, what happens next? Now, is there going to be, are there plans for more intensive surveying? Will there be more research on like the habitat of the area? What's kind of coming together at this point?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. I think those are the next steps. I think the first sort of step one is just to learn a little bit more about this bird. You think we sort of started with this one piece of evidence, a single specimen from 170 years ago. Now we have a little bit more. We have a precise location and a photograph, but there's still a ton we don't know about this bird. So step one is really to try and find it in the field and learn a little bit more about the behavior, habitat requirements, and get a sense of how widespread this species might be. Judging from the fact that it was so hard to find, we can guess that it's probably restricted in where it lives and is only found in a few areas, but we don't know how restricted, and we don't really know whether those areas might be at risk due to habitat destruction, right? So the first step is to sort of figure out, learn a little bit more about it, see what the potential risks might be. And then the second step is to start working with the local community to try and protect the habitat where this bird is. And one of the exciting things about the babbler is that this is, you know, there's so many bird watchers out there who are really excited about this story and would love to have a chance to see the babbler, that there's great potential to develop some ecotourism around this site. And hopefully there'll be opportunities to, you know, develop some ecotourism and benefit the local community to protect the habitats where this bird was found.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. John Mittermeier. He's the Director of Threatened Species Outreach with the American Bird Conservancy, and we're talking about the rediscovery of the black-browed babbler, a bird that resides in forests of Borneo, Indonesia, a bird that had not been observed formally for 172 years. And suddenly, hey, here it is. And that's the interesting thing I wanted to follow up. You mentioned about training local populations to become, in effect, citizen scientists. Because who knows that over the decades that maybe there were locals that had seen the babbler and knew that the babbler was there, but they weren't inquired or so, or they didn't share that information. So citizen science, local citizen science can play a huge role in helping to document stories like this.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And for me, that's one of the most exciting and sort of uplifting trends that we see happening now in conservation is that, you know, very often local communities know their wildlife really well. They often may be familiar with these birds, but they're just not connecting with the rest of the scientific community. There's no opportunities to share that information. And now we see, you know, people even in remote areas of Borneo have cell phones. They often have smartphones with cameras on them. And there are ways to connect through social media or other with birding groups, both nationally and internationally. And so in this case, it was a couple of people who, you know, just local people went out with their smartphone, found this bird, had been connected to some birding groups online, and took some pictures with their smartphone. And I think that's something that it's a trend that we're going to see a lot more of going forward is these community scientists, people who are able to document and share information in ways that really wasn't possible before.
Well, it's so interesting. I think like this discovery and sort of this ability of communities to participate in the science through technology begs the question of what about all of these other missing bird species? You know, I read on your website there are more than 150 bird species that are currently, quote, lost, which means no confirmed observations in the past 10 years. You know, what is the implication of this discovery on those situations?
Yeah, well, I think there's sort of, I think there's a positive spin to this, definitely. And one is that I think we really think now, for the first time, it may be possible to connect this sort of global knowledge network and start to find all of these missing birds, try to find all of the lost birds. And if you think about that, I think that's a really exciting potential accomplishment and goal for the global birding community. Say, for the first time, we could all be working together to find every species of bird on Earth and regularly update and get documented information about those species so that we ensure that none of them go extinct. And part of the process here is not just sort of going out on expeditions to visit areas where no one lives, but actually just connecting with local people who may already have this information and bringing them into this network so that we can all be working together to document birds.
All right, well, let's try to localize the story then. What species of birds, say, here in the U.S., and specifically in the western U.S., are considered, quote-unquote, lost?
Well, that's a great question, and one of the things about the U.S., and the western U.S. in particular, well, I guess all of the U.S., is that we already have a lot of bird watchers out in America and people who are doing an amazing job documenting birds. So there's only a few species in all of the United States that currently qualify as lost. One of those that will be familiar to many listeners is the ivory-billed woodpecker, which is not found in the western U.S., but is in the southeastern U.S. And that's a tricky one because there's been a lot of efforts to search for that. And in fact, there's a good chance it may already be extinct. So that's another challenge with these lost species is thinking about when is something lost and still out there, we just can't find it, and when has it actually gone extinct and, you know, we may be looking for a ghost. So in general, there are not that many lost birds in the U.S. And that's part of the reason for that, because we already have this great community of bird watchers and community scientists who are getting out there and documenting information.
All right. Well, then we'll have to expand. Oh, don't kill my hope about the ivory-billed woodpecker, John.
Well, let me also just add one point on this. I will say if someone does find the ivory-billed woodpecker, I would be ecstatic. I think it would be an absolute sensation in the global birding community. But one thing I want to add there is that you have different levels of sort of knowledge gaps, right? You have, on the one level, you have lost species, which are, you know, something like a black-browed babbler, which is an entire species of bird that no one's been able to locate at all. But then you have other bits of sort of missing information that can also be really important for conservation and ornithology. And there may be more opportunities at these more local scales to for people in the Western U.S. to find things that are really helpful. So that might be something similar to not, you know, the whole species is lost, but does a particular species nest in a certain mountain range? These sort of things that learning about some of this more local scale information, whether it's, you know, perhaps there's a species of bird that breeds in Idaho, but has never been confirmed breeding in Utah. So the question is, does this bird breed in Utah, or is it actually, you know, not occur across the state line? So I think there are a lot of opportunities for people to help, you know, achieve these sort of missing gaps in our knowledge. I'm really hopeful that we're going to find some ways to put those questions out there and get people engaged in helping us answer them.
Well, at the American Bird Conservancy, you're the director of the Threatened Species Outreach, and I'm curious about some of the work or the projects that ABC Birds has going on in this area.
Yeah, so we have a lot of projects happening. We work in the Western U.S. We work on threatened species, for example, marbled murrelets, a species that we've been working on, and on kind of the Pacific coast. My personal work is more internationally focused. I work with our international team in South America, and we have partners in 15 different countries across South America. And then also, as I mentioned, working on lost birds, that's one that we're hoping to identify some of these local priorities in the Western U.S. and you know, across North America. But at the moment, we've started with these things that are lost species, most of which tend to be in areas with fewer bird watchers, such as South America and Indonesia.
So a few more minutes. I like to think that this story goes beyond just birds, too. I'm sure all scientists and researchers who are doing work in area of threatened species, whether it's plants, animals, fish, all have to be inspired by this story. Because if a bird that was missing for 170 years can be rediscovered, well, then perhaps there are butterflies and other ground animals or marine species that are still out there. You know, we just haven't, we just still have to continue to make the effort to rediscover them too. Have you heard from other scientists like that?
Yes, and I think actually birds, because they generate so much interest in this sort of birdwatching community, they're one of the groups that is best documented, that we have the most knowledge about. So in fact, birds are one of the groups with the fewest missing species. If you start to look at insects, amphibians, reptiles, or plants, you know, there are many more species that are these mysteries where, you know, there's a lot of information to still be found. And actually, one of our partner organizations, Global Wildlife Conservation, has a search for lost species where they've identified missing species in other taxonomic groups that have been lost and are helping to do expeditions to look for those. So their website, Search for Lost Species, is definitely worth checking out for some of the stories about rediscoveries and animals that are still missing in groups outside of birds.
When you are talking about, you know, these rare species and encouraging people to go and kind of help look for them, is there concern about the impact of a big group of really excited people going to search for these species and maybe doing more harm than good by disturbing it or impacting its habitat?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a concern, and it's something we have to be careful about. You know, for example, with the case of the black-browed babbler, there's a big challenge right now in Southeast Asia around bird trade, and that's the catching of birds to be kept as pets. And, you know, often there's sort of interest in having particularly rare birds to keep in your bird menagerie. And so that was part of one of the concerns with the rediscovery of this bird is trying to keep the location a little bit secret for the time being to prevent people from going in and trying to trap it to have it as a pet. So that's one concern. There's also concerns just around how do you develop ecotourism in a sustainable way so that it benefits the community and benefits the bird and doesn't end up with, you know, the habitat getting trampled by over-enthusiastic visitors. And I think there are definitely ways to do that but it's something that you have to be really careful and considerate in how you address.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. Fascinating that this love it to death idea can come into play. And as you described, John, people may be out there, instead of having field glasses, they may have traps and have nefarious motivations to want to capture these species. But you know what? Seeing a photograph of it and reading a story, it's good enough for me. You know, I don't have to go to Indonesia to see it, but I'm not saying that, there are a lot of people who would love to book flights tomorrow or today to get there and see it and add it to their bird list. But we have to be careful about that enthusiasm and the consequences associated with that.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I would be in the category of people who would love to go travel and have the chance to see it. But I think you're exactly right, that you have to be careful to not overwhelm the habitat or the bird or the communities around this area. But at the flip side, I think we want to, there are ways to engage. There are ways to go out and visit these places to try and see these birds. And if done correctly, having visitors go and developing ecotourism can be a huge benefit for the communities and a great way to try and protect the habitat and the species.
We got to run. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of who the American Bird Conservancy is and how we can learn more about your organization.
Yeah, so you can check out our website, abcbirds.org. You can also find us on any of the major social media platforms at abcbirds. And we're a bird conservation organization based in Washington, D.C., and we work to protect birds and bird habitats across the Americas. That's our primary focus. We also have a few initiatives that are taking on a little bit more of a global perspective, such as our work on lost birds. But we're doing a lot of things to protect habitats. We're also trying to influence policy to help protect birds here in the Americas. And as I mentioned earlier, we have partnerships internationally in several countries across the Americas and are working to prevent threatened species and bird habitats there. So definitely check out our website, check out our social media, and learn more about the specific work that we're doing.
Dr. John Mittermeier, he's the Director of Threatened Species Outreach with the American Bird Conservancy. John, thanks again so much for taking the time to chat with Nell and myself on This Green Earth, and we hope to stay in touch with you to hear more uplifting stories when they land on our desk.
Definitely.
Great. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.